Susan, Will Watson and I, Daisy Newman, have come to see you. We would like to hear you tell something about the early days of Cambridge Meeting, because we not only hold you in very great affection, but you are our one link with the early days, the very beginnings of Friends Worship in Cambridge. It's going to mean a great deal to friends in the meeting to hear what you have to say about those early days.
Well, I would be very glad to tell you, because when I was growing up, I was the sixth in my family. And the family pattern was pretty well established by that time. And I will begin by saying there was no Friends meeting available to us. There was a meeting in Roxbury, but those were horse and carriage days, and it was out of the question of driving from here to Roxbury and back for meeting. We had no meeting to go to.
And you were Hicksite friends, weren't you?
Yes.
Which would have made it the pastoral meeting in Roxbury not what you were accustomed to.
Well, probably, although I don't know anything about the Roxbury meeting, except that it existed and that we had no connection with it.
What was your family name, Susan?
Hallowell.
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 I should say that we
were Quakers from way back, on both my mother's side and my father's side.
And when Daisy says you were Hicksite, that means you grew up in Philadelphia.
My father did.
Yes.
My mother grew up in New York. Mm-hmm. And my mother never got over the sorrow of the being split in the Friends. And when it was healed, she was in the foremost of being very thankful. So as a substitute for having any regular meetings go to, we had the simplest kind of a meeting in my father's library. Now, I was born just across the street here, where my father and mother married in 1868, built their house there after father had served in the Civil War. Not for the preservation of the Union, but for justice to his fellow men. He always wanted that, very clearly stated. War was the only way he had expressing himself. That shows the atmosphere that we all grew up in. It was definitely a Quaker atmosphere. When the war was over, father closed the door on it and devoted the rest of his life to being friends to the colored people. And he did. He was best friend, and he devoted all he could to them.
When you say here, we mean in Medford. We're talking in Medford, just across the street on Mystic, on Mystic Street here.
On Mystic Street.
Yeah.
And so I've never lived anywhere else.
Right.
All my rather long life, except on Mystic Street, West Medford.
Tell what your father said when you were born.
Oh, do you want that?
Yes.
Well, father and mother established what we have carried on ever since then, a gathering of the family at Christmas Eve. So that was a chance for everybody getting off jokes and funny things after we'd all had a buffet supper here. And then, after the fun, we settled down to reading the Bible and the Phillips books and all that. Well, father had written a poem about touching on each member of his family of six children, poking fun at them. So the only line I can remember was, as he ended off his poem, he said, "And then at last came good old Sue. And then the Lord said, now that will do." So That shows what kind of a man my father was. He was just full of jokes and fun.
When were you born, Susan? What year?
1883. Yeah.
And we're now in 11th of October, 1982.
Yes.
99.
Approaching 99.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's not what you're interested in.
No. Well, but it was...
Well, we started... Mother began having this little Sunday meeting in the library. As I said, it was just across the street from here. The house had to be torn down later on. And I can remember perfectly well my sister Esther, who was 2.5 years older than I, reciting the poems which Mother had taught us for the occasion. So that was our way of speaking and meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then...
Were these Quaker poems, or...?
No, not
devotional.
Well, anything that Mother thought was appropriate. I can't remember what we recited, except that we did feel that we were taking part, and then the rest of the time was silence. So I had an older sister who was 13 years older than I, and then came my three brothers. They really were something. They were gorgeous athletes, all three of them, and they had plenty of friends. And by that time, we'd all been going to school in Boston. There wasn't good enough education up here, so all six of us went from here to Boston. And they were very sociably inclined, and the weekend was time when they could have their friends come out and spend the weekend. So not a single Quaker was anywhere around among our friends, nothing. But it became too difficult to have a Quaker meeting with all the interruptions of people that didn't know. So the meetings came to an end. Well, then Mother, that's when she first began to be interested that there was no Quaker meeting in this part of the country. So she began to spread that thought around that there should be a meeting for friends in Cambridge. And I think, although I won't say this is gospel truth, I think she was the moving spirit of people thinking along that line.
What was her name?
Sarah Horton Halliwell. And my father's name was Norwood Penrose Halliwell. She was Sarah Horton Haydock, and she left out the Haydock when she married Father and became Mrs. Norwood B. Howell. But he carried the name of Colonel all through. People called him Colonel. That was their term of affection for him. As far as I can remember, Henry Cadbury was then living in Cambridge. And he and Mother became fast friends. And also, you remember Isabel Dubin?
Oh, yes.
Her brother, William.
Yes.
And his wife were finally the ones who architected our meeting.
Yes.
Now, that was my mother's dream. For a good many years, I can't make this chronologically accurate, because it was Mother's thinking, and in due time she and the others arranged a whole meeting in the Andover Theological School on Francis Avenue in Cambridge.
And before that, didn't they go to the YWCA in Cambridge for some meetings?
If they did, I don't know anything about them.
All right.
My connection began in the theological school.
Yes.
And Esther and I used to go there with Mother occasionally, but we weren't very regular. But the seed was sown in us, and we soon became very much interested in the proposition of a meeting house belonging to the Society of Friends in Cambridge. And then we got very closely intimate with it as it was being built by William and Mary with the Isabels. We knew them all intimately. And then we had, of course, when it was established, we had Henry Perry and
Stephen Rushmore.
Yes, and Stephen Rushmore. Not so much Stephen Rushmore, because he didn't live here, did he?
Well, I think he and Henry were the ones who bought the center before the meeting house was built.
Who bought the what?
The Friends Center.
Oh, yes. Well, now you see, you know more about that than I do.
Well, I used to come up from New Haven then.
Yeah. Well, you see, Esther and I were young then. We hadn't been brought up with meeting in New Haven. Very regular attendance.
And George was
And George, of course.
Yes.
Oh, yes, very importantly.
And he's written all about your mother and about your father, too, in his book.
Yes. Yes, I'm sure. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Well, the meeting house was built in 1937.
1937. Mother died in 1934.
So she didn't
see. So you see, there was a great gap there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the things that I regret so much.
Mm-hmm. She would have
and
loved
I
it.
I think of it all the time, that really Mother had sowed the seeds.
Mm-hmm.
But she never saw it realized.
But she must have felt the growing strength of that meeting, though, because before they came to make their minds up to build, they had to come to some.
That really was her dream. She did a great deal to further it and make it possible.
That's wonderful.
Now maybe you know who inaugurated the idea of the fireplace in the meeting?
There was a fireplace in the Brown Room at the Divinity School where they met on Francis Avenue.
Oh, yes.
And the chairs were arranged around the fireplace, and they loved that. And so when the plans were made, when the Duguids drew up the plans, they thought there were friends who wanted a fireplace.
Yeah.
But there were other friends who said that it wasn't appropriate for a meeting house. And so they compromised by putting in the fireplace and by having those panels that they put up in the summer to hide the fireplace. And that satisfied the people who didn't want one.
Yeah. Oh, good. Oh, you see, she knows great more about this.
it was such a Quakerly way of
yes.
making this compromise.
Yes, that's right. That's a Quakerly way. Well, now, do you care to have me tell what has remained in my mind?
If we're not tiring you, we would love to hear it.
After that meeting was built, Esther and I, my sister, became really regular attenders. I wish you'd known her.
Oh, I did. I remember her coming in the Jeep. I remember
that
Jeep.
Okay.
Used to scare us to death.
I remember.
You remember?
Everybody remembered the Jeep.
Yes. Oh, yes, I knew her.
Well, my mind, somehow or other, pictured my mother sitting in that new meeting house. I can see it just as plainly now as I have ever since then. When the benches went at right angles to the fireplace,
yes.
Mother was seated in the end seat of that bench so that she could see the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And there she is in my mind. And it's absolutely impossible.
Yes, but I
see it just as plain as I see you two. Yeah.
Well, I think Willie is right.
And stay with me.
Mm-hmm. That's lovely.
So I just love it. Naturally, I think of Mother and meeting frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And I picture her. Well, I meant to bring down her picture as being the perfect representation of a human being so closely in communication with the inner light that it just, I'd say, shone out through her countenance.
Mm. Beautiful.
It was just personification. Because she was a seeker.
So are you, Susan.
Oh, now don't say that.
Yes, no. You are. You are to us.
Well, my mother. You know my mother.
No, I didn't know her.
Oh, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. You said you were. Well, now that brings me to something which is, you can cut this out if you want to. But as I've grown older, I really didn't grow up until I was well on my 80s, and then I began to do some thinking.
That's a great encouragement to many people.
I've done a lot since then. And one thing that I dwell on all the time is our indebtedness to our forebears. Now, I wish, if Larry's through this teaching there, I have along the so that fireplace, I have pictures of my great-grandmother, Deborah Fisher, who married William Horton in 1817. I have there two pictures in the middle. On the left is one of their beautiful five Horton sisters, who was my grandmother. Over here was my mother.
All right, I remember.
Do you remember them?
I
showed them to you the other day. Well, I feel that as far as I'm concerned, I date back to Deborah Horton as somebody that I must have seen. But I didn't know who she was when I was too little to realize. And to me, she had that same expression of serenity in her whole atmosphere, in her face. My grandmother had the same thing. My mother had the same thing. Now, if some of this has brushed off under me, I'm perfectly thankful. And I feel that it has, to a certain extent. So, to me, it's awfully interesting. Mm-hmm. And it's certainly shed off on my sister Esther. Fully.
Yes.
Well, now, I've said about all I have to say, I think. You want to ask some more questions?
Yes, I want to ask you something. You know, the Cambridge meeting is having a struggle about the advices that the committee on that's revising Faith and Practice,
yes.
The Book of Faith and Practice,
yes.
And they want to return to the custom of using advices. But there are some members of Cambridge meeting who feel that they don't want to be told how to behave. They don't mind the queries, they don't mind being asked whether they are doing certain things, but they don't want to be told. And this has created a certain amount of disunity in the meeting, and we're having to come to grips with it. Now, you and I have lived through two episodes in the history of Friends in this part of the world. The joining of the Roxbury meeting, which was pastoral, with the Cambridge Friends, who were unprogrammed. They were very different, and yet they in some way found the means of uniting through waiting for God's light. And then at the time of the reunion of the two yearly meetings in 1945 in New England, it was the same thing. There were many monthly meetings that were pastoral and had an entirely different outlook from Cambridge and all the other independent meetings and the Wilburite meeting in Westerly. And yet we managed somehow to create a unity that took us forward. Now, to what do you ascribe this, and how could we apply this same process to creating unity in Cambridge over the advice?
What a question.
Well, it seems like a small issue compared to joining these very different groups. It seems like a very small issue to me. But yet, there are some friends who are making a very large issue out of it.
Yes. I don't think there is any definite answer to that. I feel on these young people all the sweeping changes that there have been in my lifetime. You know what I'm referring to.
Yes.
All I can say is that is not the way that we grew up. We have demonstrated the kind of lives that we wanted to live. Now the world doesn't belong to us to decide for other people that they should adopt the ways that we thought were right.
Right.
This is the world of the young people who are young today. They may change their principles and their way of thinking when they get to be as old as we are. But for the time being, we old folks must bow down and say, this is your world. We have demonstrated the kind of world we thought was right for us. It's not up to us anymore.
That's right.
Well, that's the only way we could.
Of course, one of the things that strikes me about friends is that age seems so less important than it does in other groups. That you can have the most extraordinary conversation with somebody 30 years older or 30 years younger than you are and not realize the age difference.
Well,
that's
a good thing. Yeah.
That is one of the great glories of Quakerism, I think. It was made up in the first place of people of all ages, and no one was set up as
a
priesthood.
The fact that we don't have a minister.
Yes.
Oh, that's the fundamental thing for me, that it's everlastingly up to the individual.
Yes.
Nobody else can pattern that individual.
That's right.
They can be influenced, but they're the ones that have got to decide what they want to make of their lives.
I'm very grateful that you've let us come and that you've talked to us.
Oh dear. I don't feel as though I had much to offer, but
I wish we could just go on.
That's it.
Don't you?
Well, I don't think we ought to tire you out, but I have...
Well, don't consider me. I'm having an extremely interesting time.
Because I have other questions.
But you have to,
we're like eager dogs, ready to race around. You have to pull the leash back, you see. You have to constrain us.
No, because I think this is very dear thing of you to want to do, to see whether an old person like me has anything to say. No, I've said it all. I don't know what else happened.
I'm interested in the spirit of worship at home and how you as a young girl grew up in a Quaker family and how you were brought to mind.
Just because we love each other.
That's the main thing, sure.
That's the foundation, everything. I don't think there's any family in existence. Where our immediate family right now is 30. That's our in-laws and new babies and so forth. And the bond of love that ties us together. I don't have to say anymore. Mm. Now they'll all come here. Of course, more than half of my life went out when Lawrence died. And we all got together. Now, what are we going to do without him? And I didn't have to settle it. My grandchildren settled it. Because when one of them was going, or two of them were leaving here after some occasion, one of them said to the other, "Goodbye, see you Christmas Eve." I hadn't said a word about taking Christmas Eve, that settled it. They wanted to come. Supposing they hadn't wanted.
Yes.
And this last summer, we had all but three of those 30 visitors down the Cape. So that's my answer to him. It's just sheer. We have the best time when we get together. Full of sun, full of fun. And when Lawrence died, we had a little quiet time here in the house before we, he was a Unitarian, a faithful, oh, such a deep rooted Unitarian liberal religion. We had our own little gathering of the immediate family in here. And we were all of one mind that now he was gone, it was for us to carry on for him in the way he would want us to. So we have. We get together here and there and everywhere else and just have a perfectly lovely time because we know that he wants us to do. Well, excuse me now, I didn't mean to get going on this.
I just want to say it was so wonderful that he lived to be 100.
Yes, wasn't it?
Yes.
And he lived to be 100 to see the result of his teaching to all the younger members of the family.
And of the community. Yes, because he made such a difference.
I know it.
Do you remember Bible reading and things of that, like that at home, or was your family, perhaps like more modern families today, don't?
Didn't spend too much time Bible reading. That's one of the things I really regret. I did not have a mental, intimate knowledge of the Bible. It seems a funny thing for me to say now, but Mother used to read aloud to us all the time. When we had one friend we had from England, a very, very intimate friend, very intelligent friend. She came out visiting the house across the way very often, and they would come out a great many on Sundays. We'd sit down anywhere from 12 to 15 to 20 Sunday dinner, have a roast beef and all the fixings. Then go out and play bacon and things outside and come in at the dusk. We would all gather around the living room, lying on the floor in front of the fire, and Mother would read aloud to the whole gang. And this English friend was so impressed with what Mother read to us. Just a happy, noisy crowd, you might say. All hushed down, listening to Mother read. Well, the stories of King Arthur. She loved the stories of King Arthur, the chivalry and the knights and all that. So that although we didn't have particularly Bible readings, Mother brought us up on the best of literature. One of her favorite things was The Vision of Cilantro. Mm-hmm. You know that?
Yes.
You quote.
No,
James Rousselot. You quote a little.
The Phillips Brooks.
Phillips Brooks, yes. Well, Mother knew that almost by heart. So that's the reading aloud we did have. Just nothing but the best. Mother read perfectly beautifully. So our bringing up, it was just divine bringing up.
Well, it shows.
Well, maybe.
I think we shouldn't.
Not most.
We shouldn't bother you anymore.
Well,
we
I don't want to.
Want to say we love you.
You get me talking as I talk. Well, thank you.